not set in stone. However traditional this thing written in stone was, his imprint was named Archaeopteryx lithographica, the ancient feather, by the man who found it. To the point, a good name from a man who understood something of the idea that some things are not things that we know. You see, the point is, before that, people thought that God did this, and it is more than set in stone. In fact, aberrations are the devil. This was not a good state of affairs either, but it did leave a space for some weird creatures to erupt from the minds of fevered medieval scholars.
I am twice born. I hear the monotonous sound repeating. I listen not to the sound of the ventriloquist, but to the voice of my left ear, past the whistling. I go through the double gate and cross the churchyard, follow the track with a wooden fence on my left. I get further from seeing the source of the humming. I stumble and then back again. It is there.
The cloven foot in the igneous rock, dancing in the hot sun, showing us that we don't know what we are looking at despite the constructions and brackets we try to put around it and the names we insert. Not to mention the inside, and the possibility of numerous air sacs and condenser boilers.
But when I approach within a few yards of the spot from where the sound is being produced, the humming suddenly stops, but then becomes audible again at the other side of the fencing that runs along this meadow. Carry on. I can't see the meadow on my right. I circle around the fence, finding a surfaced path. Silence.
The possibility of numerous air sacs and condenser boilers. But at least the Latin evokes the archaic moments, ritual, fear, the fantastic. Even if it purports to classify.
Thank you.
host of furious fancies, thereof I am commander. With a burning spear and a horse of air, to wilderness I wander, by a night of ghosts and shadows, I summoned am to tourney, 10 leagues beyond the wide world's end. Methinks it is no journey, yet I will sing. An anonymous 16th century poem. Listening to They Own the Night, a radiophonic piece by myself, Salome Vögelin, and David Molin, with Nicolas Perret and Sylvia Ploner, we never really know what we are listening to. Our listening constructs rather than recognize it. It listens to listening and hears the doubt and exploration that distinguishes such a sonic engagement. This listening is about doubt, about admitting that we do not really know, and rather than searching for a real knowable that could confirm what things are, we have to make up for what we are not sure about through guesses, through prior knowledge, the contingent imagination, as well as through desire and fear. We have to participate and are complicit in what is known, and there is no guarantee we ever really know if we keep assuming that what we really want to know exists before the encounter. However, that does not mean things heard are all a lie. Rather, it suggests that the line between the real and the made up, the imagined and the invented, is much thinner and slighter than we would like to admit. The thonic is threadbare and ragged, its boundaries porous. It is ineffective in holding off other realities that sound from the invisibility, at the margin, that have no name, no classification, and no clear shape. And this doubtful elasticity of the heard makes us question the certainty and formedness of the supposedly real, even of the visual. When listening, the fantastic and its fabulations seep into the what we trust to be real, what we thought we have seen, expand it, darkening it, filling it with the flesh of invisible bodies, shapes and things, coming nearer, touching the flesh of our ears. Questioning the infrastructure of the actual, its knowledge pathways, and those of its communication. It unperforms language through sounding the voice. Language's grammar tries to take back from the uncertain expanse a recognizable shape. It tries to make a space between my ears and your sound. It hopes to apply lexica and criteria to create an order of meaning and sense that give the heard the perspective of the seen. But the sound of the voice hearing resists the clarity and organization. Instead, its sound is the sound of a voice listening that collapses the distance of knowledge and brings the unbelievable into the real. It opens facts to the invented, the unreliable and its sonic fictions that destabilize the maps, the lexicon, language and plans. And it demands another way to understand what might be real, not from the certainty of things apart, this or that, you or me, but from the unstable contact between them and between us, into which the possible slips to in effect change actuality with its sonorous truth. Anya Lockwood's Tiger Bowl from 1970 composes such a sensorial actuality. This is not the Amazon forest. It is not a tiger either, but it creates a space, the space of here as a rhythmic expanse that calls me into an encounter with what a tiger might be sonically. It is not actual and it is not supernatural. It is a possibility of the real, which means it is one possibility of all the possibilities that make up the real, because there is nothing in the world that goes beyond our experiencing it. It might lack the certainty of the image and of language, but it holds the knowledge of rhythms, of breath, of intensity, of duration, and that of our participation. Breathe normally. In and out, in and out. Stop breathing.
You have that. Well, I can look at that and imagine to some extent what it's going to sound like. So there is a relationship. But I don't really listen to the sound in that analytical way that I can look at the spectrogram. And that's partly because of the importance of because it's a scientific or an engineering practice, everybody who's looking at the spectrogram, who's been trained to read a spectrogram, can see the same thing in it. So I know that if I show this to a colleague, they will see the similar frequency variations that I've talked about, the similar changes in loudness. But if I think about talking about what I would hear if I listen to that, I think it's much harder to think that we would all describe it the same way. And we saw that with the students this morning. They all heard the same thing and they all said slightly, well, it was very subjective what they said. Obviously they weren't trying to be scientific about it. They were being subjective, but their starting point was that they all heard it in a different way. But we're trying to use it to communicate. Science is about communicating, not just finding things, but communicating what you found. So it needs to be straightforward for me to take this to a conference and show it to somebody else, show it to a room full of people, and when I say the bit with the swooping, with the frequency sweeps up and down, they'll say, oh yes, that's this bit at the right-hand end of the picture. We need to agree that what we're seeing, and really we need to agree that it's measurable, so that's about, what are we in, kilohertz, so it's about 2 kilohertz up and down.
Legitimate listening. This sensorial sonic knowledge has largely been expunged from science, viewed as unreliable, unrepeatable, untrustworthy. It is excess, formless, unstable, unreliable, feminine. Instead, and to make up for its shortcomings in relation to the expectation and use of science, it has been replaced by and deformed into visualizations, spectrograms, chart blocks, infograms. These are translations of the heard into a visual language which we presume we can grasp and share, that are repeatable, always the same, consistent and trustworthy, that hold a truth rather than spilling it out or letting other truths seep into its porous frame, that have clear boundaries, are read from left to right, that have a grammar that can be taught and the right and wrong that can be discerned. In other words, it is sound transformed into a visual language that owns our breath as a visual breathing rather than a sonic inhalation and exhalation. Sound is breath as a rhythm heard contingently on the body, from the flesh of lungs to the flesh of ears. Here listening closes a circle of intimacy in a sound that holds a knowledge of what we share rather than something over there. And in this way it enacts the paradox of a shared sense that relies not on our sharing of bodies, lungs and ears, but our trust in what is at a distance, translated into abstraction, dedicated to the eye. And so we believe we see the same. But instead, it is a text, a textual sign that holds our breath.
You have that same question when I say that's red. Are you seeing the same? You might agree it's red, but are you seeing the same thing as I'm seeing? There's that whole question of whether the shared language even is giving you the same perceptual experience.
To engage in this unreliable knowledge, to bring its uncontrollable expanse into knowledge, discourse and practice, I work with Anna Barney, a professor in biomedical acoustic engineering, who you just heard talking to us. I'm from Southampton University, and Dr. Mark Peter Wright and Bridget Hart at the London College of Communication, on a project called Listening Across Disciplines. We try to figure out how listening can contribute to how we see the world, how it can question our normative strategies of discovery and our habitual ways to see things, and whether it is possible to establish listening as a legitimate, trustworthy and applicable research process that can access invisible knowledge and can broaden how we understand and do things to contribute from the invisible to the solving of pressing issues of ecology, economy, politics and social structures, integration and equality, education and so on, without losing its sensorialness and its sensuality. However, we do not aim to take away from the visualization techniques and strategies its knowledge and language, and do not refute the visual sensibility of current scientific work. Instead, we want to confront it with its sound as flesh, as contingency that demands an attention to the unreliable. What falls out of its image and language, what does not repeat, what is at the margin, what remains unaccounted for, not explained or explicable, but what needs to be experienced nevertheless. Since if I listen and I can hear it, its sound must take part somehow in what I think I see, and what I think of what I see. And if I listen and I cannot hear it, I must stretch my ears to hear what I do not know to listen out for, what has no name, and I do not know yet how to call, and therefore I cannot hear. In this way, sound, its sonic instability and invisible demand, can contribute a different thinking, a sonic sensibility, as an admission of the sensorial to our spectrum of scientific thought. To contribute as a sonic alchemist to the diversity of what can be known, how we can do things, how we can understand and communicate the real expanded. The inclusion of the almost unbelievable in scientific discourse, the quaint and seemingly mystical because invisible, is not new. Prior to the mid-1900s, the mythical, the spiritual and the esoteric had an established place at the table of knowledge. But it was overtaken by rationality, which is quintessentially visual, referential and mathematical. And thus, through listening, the unseen and the uncalculable can be reawakened to find new answers to questions of our visual economy from what we cannot see. This is not about magical thinking, pulling causation out of thin air, but about allowing other forms of thinking into the realm of what it is worthy and useful to be thought, and what might be allowed to contribute to what we consider real. Ultimately, this is not about sound and listening really, but about experience, sense and the sensorial, and to reverse the alienation away from the body back into our lungs and ears.
Fear, the fantastic, even if it purports to classify.
I hear it. It comes from a grassy open area, the gaps. Not far. No more than 50 yards from my house, and I am determined to see it. I am a few yards off the spot from where the sound is being produced. And the humming suddenly stops, but then becomes audible again at the other side of the fencing that runs along the meadow. I can feel the grassy track end, and I continue on a chalky path. I wait.